In our last sermon on prophecy, we covered the second chapter of the book of Daniel. In this chapter, Daniel tells King Nebuchadnezzar not only what he had dreamed, but he tells King Nebuchadnezzar what it meant. He interpreted the dream for him. And what he saw in his dream is a great image symbolizing the four coming earthly kingdoms. The head of gold was Babylon. The arms and chest of silver, the Medes and the Persians, two arms, two divisions of the kingdom, Medes and the Persians. The midsection of bronze or brass, depending on which version you're looking at, was the Greeks. And then the legs of iron were the Roman Empire, with the two divisions in the east and the west. We saw in the vision that a stone came and struck the ten toes made up of iron and baked clay. It was not iron and soft clay, but iron and ceramic clay mixed together. And that this stone hit the toes, symbolizing the United States of Europe that's coming. And then these toes, when they crumbled, the statue fell. It was turned into chaff like that's on the summer threshing floor, it says. And then the wind blew it away, and the stone became a great mountain symbolizing God's kingdom filling the earth. So in the second chapter of Daniel, we have seen from the Babylonian kingdom all the way to the return of Jesus Christ, who's actually symbolic of that stone, and the kingdom that fills the earth is God's government during the millennium. A couple of things about the chapter we covered previously. This chapter deals with earthly kingdoms. A lot of your Protestants will tell you that, oh, well, God is setting up a kingdom up in heaven. He in no such way is. This kingdom did not fill heaven. This stone did not fill heaven. This stone or the kingdom it represented filled the earth. So this is a kingdom that will rule on the earth. Just like the Babylonian kingdom and the Medo-Persian, the Greeks and the Romans. It is a earthly kingdom. Now, this is the third sermon in our series on prophecy. And today we're going to look at an amazing prophecy found in the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel. And Daniel 7 actually complements Daniel 2. And today we're going to see how they dovetail together. Now the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel records an unusual vision that Daniel received in the first year of the Babylonian king. Belshazzar. This is about 555-556 BC. The vision predicts the coming of the major world empires and events from the time of the time of Daniel to the second coming of Christ. And this vision ends with Daniel saying the following. Let's go to Daniel chapter 7 and let's look at what Daniel says after this vision is given and interpreted by one of the angels. Daniel chapter 7 and in verse 28, this is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me and my countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. So Daniel was very troubled by what he saw and it affected him greatly. Now, let's go to verse 1 and let's consider a couple of things. This chapter can be broken up into two sections. The first section, which is from verse 1 to about verse 14, is the actual vision or the dream that he had. And then from verse 15 on to verse 27 is the interpretation that the angel gives him of the dream. So once again, much like in Daniel chapter 2, where we had the dream being told, you know, here's what you dream, and then we had the interpretation, here's what these symbols in the dream mean. It's the same in Daniel chapter 7, except this time Daniel is doing the dreaming, or having the vision, and there's an angel that's going to interpret for Daniel what the dream means. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to see what Daniel dreamed without putting any interpretation on it. We're just going to get the facts about his dream. Now, this is in the first year of Belshazzar. He was king of Babylon. This is in verse 1. Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens were stirring up the great sea. Now, if you look at some of the other visions or the other visions that John saw in the book of Revelation, when it talks about the great sea, it's talking about peoples and multitudes and nations, and it uses the word ethnos, which is a word we get ethnicity from. So it's races, cultures, different nations. And in verse 3, and four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. So as Daniel's watching in his vision or in his dream, he's by the great sea, probably the Mediterranean Sea, because that's what they call the sea. The great sea was the Mediterranean Sea. he sees four creatures or beasts coming up out of the sea one at a time. He sees the first one, then he sees the second one, then the third one, and then the fourth one. And they're not all coming up at the same time, and they're not all one beast made up of four parts. They're four separate beasts. Now, the first was like a lion in verse 4, and it had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was made, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So here we see a lion, and the lion had eagle's wings. And this animal, composite of wings and lion, stood on its hind legs, and it was given a man's heart. So somewhere or other, this animal was made to understand human things or manly things. Okay, in verse 5, and suddenly another beast, this is another separate beast, like a bear, it was raised up on one side. So it was laying down, raised up on a side. And so it favored one side. It was on a side. And it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. So in its mouth it had three ribs. And said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. So this second beast, a bear on its side, three ribs in its mouth, was going to eat a lot. That was the second beast. Chapter 6. After this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. Now, a leopard is fast. Can you imagine a leopard with four wings? It would be extra super fast. So there was a leopard that was very fast. The beast had four heads, and so it was a four-headed leopard with wings on its back. And dominion was given to it. So we've got the lion, we've got the bear, and we've got the leopard, four-headed, that have come out of the ocean one after another. Now, the next beast does not have a descriptor to it. It's such a unusual, awesome, fearsome beast that it has no counterpart. You know, Daniel didn't say, well, this beast looked like a wolf or this beast looked like a snake or whatever. There was no way Daniel could describe it. Verse 7. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So we got this very different beast, unlike the three animalistic beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns, big iron teeth, and it was stomping and breaking everything it came into contact with. And it had 10 horns. Now, you're looking at this beast, so this fourth beast has 10 horns on its head. Been represented many different ways by various religious artists. You have a representation there in your handout that I gave you. And it was it says here that as I was considering the horns, there came up another horn, a little one. So there was 10 horns, and among the horns there came up a little stout horn, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. So this horn, whatever these horns represent, There was one little horn that came up among the ten, and this one little horn got rid of three of the ten horns. Now, if you get rid of three of the ten horns, that leaves seven horns. Okay? So whatever this little stout horn is, it was instrumental in getting rid of three of the horns, whatever those horns represent. We'll get to that later. And that leaves seven of the horns that are left. So now they've only got seven horns. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. Mine has a marginal rendering, it's just great things. So this little horn made great pronouncements. And it had a mouth and eyes like a man. Now, in the Old Testament, before we get into verses 9, 10, and some others, in the Old Testament, we know that Jesus Christ is the rock. He's the rock in 1 Corinthians. We know that in many places in the Gospels and in other places, he's called the rock that the builders disallowed. He is the cornerstone. We've interpreted him as being the rock in Daniel chapter 2. Where did Christ come from? Without hands from heaven to start a kingdom. And we have to understand a little bit about the Godhead. So hold your place here in Daniel 7. We're going to be coming back to Daniel chapter 7. And let's go to John chapter 1. Not 1 John, but John. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. John chapter 1. Now people have all kinds of ways of interpreting the Godhead. And John 1 interprets the Godhead very, very plainly. You know, some people believe that Christ was a created being. Some people believe that Christ, for example, the Jehovah's Witnesses, believe that he was one of the angels that was converted into a God being, and God used him to, you know, bring salvation to mankind. Various theories. Some believe that Christ didn't exist until he was conceived in the womb of Mary, and his existence starts from his conception. Others believe that he had a prehistory and all of that. It's very easy to figure out about Christ and about the Father by reading John chapter 1. It says, in the beginning was the Word. Now, if you look at Genesis, Jesus Christ, or the God being in Genesis, spoke things into existence. He said, let there be light. There was light. Let there be a firmament. Let there be sea creatures. All of these things, he spoke them into existence. Now, in the beginning was the Word. That's the Word. The Word is translated from the Greek word logos, which is the word we get logistics from or logic from. And the Word, whatever this being was with God, and the Word was God. So this being that is called the Word, the Logos, we in the church sometimes say the spokesman, because he spoke things into existence. He was with God, and he was also God. So now we have two God beings. One is the Word, the Logos, that was there in the beginning, and the other is the one that was with the Logos, that was also God. So we got two God beings. It's still talking about the Logos and the Word in verse 3. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. We can go to the book of Colossians, and it says that Christ created all things. So we know that the Word and the Logos in John chapter 1 is Christ. Because Christ is the one that created everything. And here in verse 3, it says that all things were made through him, which is the Word of the Logos. And without him, nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of the man, etc., etc. So, we have a Word, the Logos, that was there in the beginning, that created everything. And with this Word, that was also God, was another being that was God. So we have Jesus Christ, the creator of all things, who was God, who was with another being called God. Two God beings. Verse 14. And the Word became flesh. and dwelt among us. We can stop there. Obviously referring to Christ. So the Word was Christ. Sometimes in the Bible, the Word is called the Son of Man for various reasons. The Messiah, the Savior. So Christ, the Logos, was God. He was the Word. He created everything. And there was another being with Him. The God of the Old Testament is the Word. Which means that whenever we read about a God in the Old Testament, it's talking about Jesus Christ. When it says that, you know, God did this, God brought judgment on the Egyptians, you know, we should worship God in the Old Testament, it refers to God or the Lord or Yahweh or whatever words, it's always referring to Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ was the God of the Old Testament. There are only a few places in the Old Testament where God the Father is mentioned. And this is going to be one of them here in verse 9. I gave you the background so that when we read verse 9, it makes sense. I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow. His hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame. Its wheels are burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Millions, because that's what a thousand thousands is, millions ministered to him. Tens of millions stood before him. The courts were seated and the books were opened. So this is a time of judgment. I would refer you back to Revelation chapter 20. So we have the Ancient of Days, whoever that is, that's got judgment coming that's involved in this vision here. Verse 11, I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the little horn, that's the referring to the little horn, was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain. Which beast are we referring to? We're referring to the fourth beast that didn't have an animalistic-like body, that had the 10 horns, that had the little horn on its head, and of which 3 of the first horns were cast down. That beast was destroyed. And its body destroyed and given to the burning flames. And the rest of, what about the rest of the beast? They had their dominion taken away, yet they existed for a while. So here we have what happens to the fourth beast. The fourth beast is destroyed and slain. Its body was destroyed, given to the burning flame. The rest of the beast continued along. This is looking at it from hindsight. What happened? Well, we know this happened to the fourth beast. What happened to the other ones? Well, the other ones were continued for a while, but they also were destroyed. You know, they came to their end. Dominion was taken away. Now, back to verse 13. We know that there's an Ancient of Days now. How does this Ancient of Days relate to God the Father and the Son? I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man. One like the Son of Man. Now, let's go to the following place. Let's go to Revelation 1:13. Revelation 1:13. Revelation 1:13. The 7 lampstands represent the church. The 7 churches, or the 7 church eras, or the 7 church ages. Verse 13, and in the middle of the 7 lampstands, right in the middle of the churches, one like the Son of Man. Remember we talked about the Son of Man? Clothed with a garment down to his feet and girt about with his chest with a golden girdle. And it talks about him and all that he did. This is obviously referring to Christ. Okay, now let's go to Matthew chapter 8. In dozens of places, brethren, in the New Testament and in the Gospels, references made to this. Matthew chapter 8 and in verse 20. And Jesus said to him, this is Jesus, and from this people say, oh, well, Jesus was like a vagabond. No, he just was in a part of town or in part of his travels where there was no place to stay. And Jesus said to him, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. So Jesus is the Son of Man. Now, interestingly, Go to Matthew 24. Go to Matthew 24. The Son of Man is talked about in Daniel chapter 7. He's associated with the Ancient of Days. The Son of Man is talked about in Revelation. He's clothed with a golden girdle. The Son of Man is Christ, being referred to as he has nowhere to sleep in Matthew. Notice Matthew 24. And we're going to look at verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, remember that there's a tribulation of those days. The sun will be darkened, the moon will not give their light, the stars will fall from the heavens, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. So there's tribulation, there's heavenly signs, and then what? Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. They're going to see the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, returning. Verse 38. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark. Notice verse 37. So also will be the coming of the Son of Man. So just like it was in the days of Noah, Son of Man's going to come in during that time. So who is the Son of Man? The Son of Man is Jesus Christ. The Son of Man is also the Logos. The Son of Man, was the Son of Man God? Yeah, because the Son of Man is Christ, and if Christ is the Son of Man, Christ is God. And Christ was the Logos, right? And that Christ, the Son of Man, was with the Word. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 7 and verse 13. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. So this is Jesus Christ coming. And what does he do? He came to the Ancient of Days. Now there's another being there, and it's not Jesus Christ. So this other being is God the Father. This is one of the few places in the Old Testament where God the Father is mentioned. So here we have, in verse 13, the middle part, he, Jesus Christ, the God, the Son of Man, came to the Ancient of Days, the God the Father. And they brought him near before him. So here we have Jesus Christ coming before God the Father. And then to him, Jesus, was given dominion and glory and a kingdom. Who gives him this kingdom? The Father. So here we see Jesus Christ being given the ability to govern the kingdom of the earth as he's going to return. God says to him, go down to earth and become the king. So then we see the Son of Man returning. This is all taking place before that. Then all peoples, nations, and languages shall serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away. His kingdom is the one which shall never be destroyed. That's part of Daniel's vision. Daniel's dream. So here we have the dream of Daniel in Daniel chapter 7. We have the great sea. And out of the great sea, there comes four consecutive beasts. The first beast is like a lion, but it had wings on it, and it was made to stand upright like a man, and a man's heart was given to this lion. Then another beast, not the same beast, but another different beast came up out of the sea, and it was a bear laying on one side, three ribs in his mouth, and it was told, eat a lot, just eat everything you see, devour all you see. Then after this, we had a leopard. Leopard is very fast. Had four wings like a bird. Made it very, very fast. But it was unusual because it had four heads. Four leopard heads. And it was alive, and then it has dominion taken away from it. After that came another beast. No animalistic form is given to it. It's an awesome, terrible beast. Daniel sees this. It comes up out of the sea. Iron teeth. It stomps and breaks in pieces everything it comes into contact with. It's got a head, one head. On this head are 10 horns. Among the 10 horns comes a little horn speaking great words. And this little horn gets rid of three of the horns. So that means there are seven horns left. And then this beast is destroyed. And then we have the judgment being given to Christ and his kingdom being set up. That's what Daniel dreamed. Okay, notice I haven't told you what any of the beasts are yet, because you don't have to be told what they are. The Bible interprets itself. Let's now look at what happens in verse 15. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit, within my body, and the vision of my head troubled me. Now he's still in vision. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him, what does all of this mean? What does all this mean? So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of those things. Now, if you hold your place there and you go to Daniel chapter 8, it's a vision of the ram and the goat. I want you to notice how it was interpreted. Verse 16. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the river. And he said, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. So in Daniel chapter 8, the vision is interpreted or made known to Daniel by Gabriel. Now it doesn't say here in verse 15 who it is that's interpreting the dream for Daniel, but you can rest assured that it was probably some kind of angelic being. So an angel, possibly Gabriel, but it doesn't name him, is going to give us the interpretation. Verse 17, these great beasts which are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So these four kingdoms are going to come, and then God's kingdom is going to appear on the earth. Then I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast. All right, now before that, let's go back to Daniel chapter 7, verse 4, and let's look at these four beasts. The first three, and then we'll go back to the fourth one. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. It's interesting, if you go to the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which were built by some of the Babylonian kings, it was one of the seven wonders of the world. They actually have excavated some of it, located in Iraq, and they've excavated the area that was in the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. And on the wall there are lions with wings on them, with men's heads, and that was a symbol of Babylon, was a lion with eagle's wings. Now, some people think that these were the cherubim that existed up in heaven, and the Babylonians simply put this on their mosaic walls. It doesn't matter where the motif for this lion with wings came from. It was commonly associated with the Babylonians. So, you know, you've got the American, you've got the eagle. What's the eagle associated with? The United States. You've got the Russian bear. The bear is associated with Russia. The dragon. Associated with China or Japan, so forth and so on. So the lion with wings was a common thing inscribed on the Babylonian walls of the Hanging Gardens. Now, in chapter 4, we're not going to go through all of it, but in chapter 4, you have Nebuchadnezzar's second dream. The first dream was the one about the image, the head and all of that. He dreams again. This time he dreams about a great tree and about the tree being cut off and cut down and a band and then the tree growing and the birds and all of that. I'm assuming that you've already read that. But what happened here is King Nebuchadnezzar, for a time period, the Bible says seven times, so for 7 years, and some say it's seven seasons, so it's 3.5 years. So for many years, apparently in Daniel 4, King Nebuchadnezzar becomes insane. And he roams the palace grounds. And then miraculously, he comes to his senses. Now, do you remember when he went insane? He went insane when he was on this palace balcony overlooking the city. And he said, I'm a really great person. Look what I have done. I have built Babylon and this empire. God says, okay, no, not going to be humble? I'll humble you. So he makes him become an animal. And then after a while, it says that his reason returned to him. And he understood that God was the one that puts kings in their place. And makes kings and breaks kings. That was the whole purpose of Daniel chapter 4. So when we go to Daniel chapter 7, it's easy to see what's being talked about here when it says in verse 4, and the lion was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So Nebuchadnezzar, his kingdom, being portrayed by the lion and the wings, his kingdom, Nebuchadnezzar being the ruler of it, was very animalistic, and then God showed Nebuchadnezzar who was God, and Nebuchadnezzar understood some spiritual principles. That's what's being referred to in being made to stand on the earth like a man. Yes?
In the old times before Christ, didn't they consider the heart the region that actually had thought?
Yep, they said that we look at, he's got a good head on his shoulders. Back then they would have said he's got a good heart in his chest. The heart was considered your center of intelligence. So a man's heart, that means that he was given a man's understanding. But very true, yes. So this is obviously in verse 4 referring to the first kingdom of Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar. Now in chapter 2, we saw that there was 4 kingdoms the last time we met. And if you look at the chart, there's 4 kingdoms. We have the Babylonian kingdom, we have the Medo-Persian kingdom, we have the Greek kingdom, and we have the Roman kingdom. And if they were world ruling, and then we have another description of these kingdoms, they would be described in very similar terms. Notice Daniel chapter 7, verse 5. And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear. The bear is a symbol for Russia. The Medo-Persians came out of the area of Western Russia. All right? The Medes and the Persians, I'm sorry. Now, the Medes and the Persians. Now, here you have an interesting thing about the Medes and the Persians. In Daniel chapter 8, let's go to Daniel chapter 8, and let's look at verse 3. Now, in Daniel chapter 8, and we're going to get to that later on, in verse 3, it talks about a ram. Now, the ram represents the Medo-Persians. The ram was a common symbol for the Medo-Persians. The goat was a common symbol for the Greeks. The ram, which had 2 horns, and the 2 horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. So you got 2 horns that are real high, but this is what happened. You got 2 horns. One of them came up high. Then the second one came up, but it became higher than the first one, which symbolizes the Medes and the Persians. The Medes started the kingdom. The Persians came into the kingdom secondarily, but they became more powerful than the Medes. So the horn being 2 of them, the Medes coming up and the Persians coming up later but dominating the kingdom, is symbolized by the horn coming up first and then the second one coming up taller than it. So there was 2. Now, do you remember in Daniel chapter 2, we had the vision of the image, and the Medo-Persians were symbolized by the chest and arms of silver. You got a right hand, and you got a left hand. And one hand is more dominant than the other. You had the Medes and the Persians, one kingdom being more dominant than the other. How would you show dominance in an animal? Well, in Daniel chapter 7, let's go there. Daniel chapter 7, verse 5. And suddenly, another beast. What's the second beast after the Babylonians? was going to be the Medo-Persians. And suddenly another beast, which is representing the Medo-Persians, like a bear, was raised up on one side. So one side was higher than the other. Just like you had the Medes and the Persians that were higher than the other. There's a reason it was high on one side. Now it could have been laying on its side, lifted up, or it could have been sitting down, but had its one side lifted up higher. Maybe to strike. I don't know. It doesn't seem to indicate how that happened. But it was higher on one side. Now it was raised up and it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. The Medes and the Persians conquered three empires before they conquered the Babylonian. Or when they conquered the Babylonians. They conquered the Babylonians. They conquered Lydia. Not Libya, but Lydia. And they conquered Egypt. So not only did they conquer Babylon, they conquered Lydia and they conquered Egypt. These were the three ribs.